Welcome to the CBI Exchange. We are the biggest voice for business in the UK, and today we're discussing the budget. And the best way that we can influence government is by us hearing directly from you. I'm joined by Louise, Mo and Alpesh, and we'll spend a bit of time talking about what's happened, what we've heard, and what the next steps might be. So I would say from talking to our members, I'm getting a real sense of frustration that everything they feared has sort of come to pass. And I've got a couple, I think, of great quotes here that sort of sum it up. So as one member put it to me, this felt like a short-term fix to manage politics, not a budget to improve the country. And another one said, there's a huge gap between the ambition to grow the economy and a plan that seems to suppress investment and consumption. So I'm going to start with you, Louise. You've been speaking to Treasury, to Number 11. You've been speaking to your clients. Have the government basically quietly sidelined the growth mission, as many of our members feel? Or is there a deeper story behind the choices that Number 11 made?
Yes, I mean, I think our big tests for the budget was going to be, what is it going to do to support growth, and that growth mission being the big objective for government. And I think on that score, the budget kind of falls flat. And like you say, you can understand that frustration from members. I think where it's landed really is the Chancellor was walking this quite narrow path between making sure that she keeps the kind of markets happy, and I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about the market reaction later, keeping the parliamentary Labour Party happy and those kind of voters on the doorsteps, and making sure we didn't see a return to that big hit to businesses that we saw last year. So I think on that score, and providing a bit more stability, creating more of a kind of buffer against those fiscal rules, I think, you know, she has walked that narrow path, but that has been, that's kind of stability is important for growth, but it's not the big growth plan that we wanted to see.
And Alpesh, you know, Louise has mentioned the markets there. Really, they haven't flinched. It seems to be a bit of a disconnect from what the markets have done to what I suppose our members are telling us, particularly outside of London. So how would you explain that to our listeners?
I mean, markets did seem to give quite a big tick to the Chancellor's budget, and actually the reaction was quite positive. I think depending on which gilt spread you look at, you know, it was the biggest fall in gilt yield since 2006. So that really is quite a definitive endorsement. I mean, we have to remember going into this budget, there was a lot of concern around the degree of the Chancellor's headroom, what that would mean for the public finances, and therefore for sort of the credibility and the sustainability of the UK's fiscal position. And I think markets were sort of really reassured by the fact that the Chancellor did manage to build up quite a large fiscal buffer against her fiscal rules, and that was quite reassuring. The other thing that I think markets were quite focused on was whether this budget would add to the inflation problem that the UK is seeing, which was very much the case in the budget last year. And actually, this budget doesn't really exacerbate that. If anything, it actually helps to sort of reduce inflation a little bit in the near term, according to the OBR's forecast. So those two things really do seem to have reassured markets. Of course, as you sort of alluded to in your opening remarks, businesses are very focused on the fact that in terms of having a longer term growth strategy, this budget was quite a missed opportunity. I'm sure we'll come on to talk about some of the measures that do directly impact business in a more negative way. I should point out, however, that markets haven't completely discounted that. It is worth bearing in mind that while the market reaction on the day to the budget was quite positive, borrowing costs for UK debt are still actually quite high. They are the highest among advanced economies. And that does appear to be markets zeroing in on the fact that a lot of the fiscal consolidation in the budget is quite backloaded to the end of this decade, close to the next general election. And participants may just be waiting to see around, to see whether the Chancellor does actually follow through on that rather than sort of backtrack.
I suppose there was a lot of talk going into the budget, and obviously, you know, the government was doing a lot of talking as well. Do you think, therefore, that the government pitched it okay, and that's why the markets weren't surprised? Like, they sort of, what was delivered was sort of what they were expecting.
I'd say actually, on the whole, what was delivered was I mean, purely in terms of sort of fiscal headroom and restoring the credibility of the public finances, that was there was probably actually a positive surprise there. I mean, the degree of headroom that has been built up is still actually quite small by historical comparison, but it was double the amount of headroom that the Chancellor secured at the spring statement earlier this year as well. So that was quite a big positive for markets. As I say, the fact that it doesn't make the inflation story worse was also a big tick. But as I say, I don't think it's sort of a done deal with markets. I think the government really has to sort of stay the line on the commitments that they promised in terms of sorting out public finances.
Excellent. And well, I was going to come, because in their last podcast, we explored about how the government has to look at thousands of submissions and everybody's got their ideas of what the best way to run the budget should be and what the measures and choices that she should make. I suppose now looking at the decisions that she did make, do you think that she genuinely did have better choices, or were the fiscal rules always going to force her into making the decisions that she has?
She had a lot of options. And I think we talked about this in the last podcast, where we said, you know, we intervened early September to call for the Chancellor to look at the manifesto pledges that they made, partly because we knew at the time that they needed to raise a significant sum of money, and to break the manifesto pledge on income tax would be one of the least distorted ways to raise a significant sum of money. So I think that there were options on the table, and this sort of approach that was taken, I mean, it's called a smorgasbord. I feel like smorgasbord is a bit inaccurate. It sounds quite good, but actually, you know, in our press release last week, we called it a bit of a scattergun approach. And I think that's probably more accurate, in that they went after they managed to raise about $26 billion in total. So it's one of the biggest tax raising budgets in recent history. And they went after very small measures. Alpesh has said that a lot of it is backloaded. 90% of the tax rises come in the second half of the forecast period. So not in the next 2.5 years, in the 2.5 years after that. So what you raise from that is highly uncertain. And then the political deliverability, again, as Alpesh mentioned, is also a question that we're going to have to come back to. I don't think these measures, back to sort of Louise's point, were, you know, we could have, if growth was the central mission, we should have seen different policies, because I think the introduction of some of these policies are actually likely to disincentivize investment and growth in some areas, and we can come on to talk about those. So I think it's something that perhaps one of the quotes you opened with, I think some of that captures what businesses are thinking about right now. So I think there were different options that they could have gone down. If we're going to be honest, if they'd badged it as a budget for stability and we need to, you know, continue fixing the foundations rather than badging it as a budget for growth, I think the messaging would have landed much better. Saying it's a budget for growth and the OBR saying there is no single measure that moves the dial on growth is, I've said it before, it's like the TLDR version of the budget is that's, you know, not a single of the 77 measures help them move the dial on growth. So I think that's quite telling. And that's the OBR saying that. That's not us saying that. But our members would agree with that sentiment.
Excellent, Mo. I think what I'd like to do now is let's go into the detail a little bit. We don't need to go over the headlines. I think everybody's seen those. What our audience will be interested in is what impacts them and their companies that they're working in. And actually, I've got a couple of quotes again. Several leaders have told me it's the detail, not the headlines, that really hit us. One manufacturer told us they're facing over £2 million a year in extra costs from the tax and reporting changes alone, money that simply cannot go into investment. A major retailer called it a missed opportunity, saying medium income households will be worse off and increased costs are now flowing straight into prices. And firms in the digital and gaming sectors describe the tax rises as far more severe than expected. And their concern is it will hit regions that are already sensitive to the shocks. So I suppose, Louise, it'd be good to start with, if we stripped it all right back, what should our members and companies out there be paying attention to, the good and the bad, that maybe didn't get the headlines?
Yeah, so I think for a lot of the members I'm speaking to, again, it depends a little bit what sector you're in, but there's a couple of areas where after the budget, they're going through the detail and really having to take it away and work out what are the impacts for them. I think one of those first ones is around labour costs, and we saw that both in terms of perhaps some of those direct impacts on the national living wage for people's workforces, but also that kind of ripple effect, even if you're not employing people at that salary, it is also kind of part of that wage setting expectation for the wider economy as well. And another big area within that is around the introduction for NICs on salary sacrifice pension contributions. So many firms, again, having to take that away, thinking about how they're going to adjust to that potential impact on costs. And I think one of the other big ones as well, and again, a long-running campaign within the CBI, has been around business rates as well. So that was one of the big measures that was announced in the budget. Again, it really depends on what sector you're in and actually the size of your business as well. So the ambition that we were told ahead of the budget was if you were a smaller kind of retailer on the high street, you would get more support. So there was some support there provided by the budget, but actually it was probably less than some people were expected. And I think that again goes back to one of those conversations that we had before of the approach that the government was taking was kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. So what they've done is they've robbed Peter slightly less to pay Paul slightly less, but it depends which of those camps that you're in. So actually those larger retailers probably still going to face an increase in bills, as well as, you know, those members that we have around kind of warehousing and kind of airports and things like that, potentially facing a very large increase in the bill. Again, this is where I think the government has partially understood some of those impacts. So as well as having less of a hit to some of those, they've also provided a pot of money to help with what they call kind of transitional relief, so kind of staging some of those increases, but it is still likely to have an increase in people's bills overall. But I think this is again an example of where we just see more and more complexity of the tax system, that it's not now that businesses can hear this statement from the Chancellor and know immediately what it is for the impact is going to be for their business. They really do have to take these things away and go through that minutiae of the detail. And I think just one overarching point as well that I've heard from many members is just on the timing of the budget. So many people are already kind of trying to nail down some of their budgets for next year and things like that. And because the budget has come so late, they're now having to unpick and kind of go through everything again to understand some of those impacts on the cost of their business, which is very kind of disruptive at this stage in the year.
Well, we also saw a big pause before, though, didn't we? So it's actually the impact isn't just from now for the next couple of months. There seemed to be, across our members, quite a lot of people for maybe 2 or 3 months before the budget, sort of waiting. So you've ended up losing five months, really, in a year.
Yeah.
Practical, then, for many of our household or consumer-facing businesses, they've also said, I mean, like, to be really practical, the budget came, I think, a day before what we call Black Friday. Yeah. So, you know, that dampening in business investment and holding off also applied to us as individuals and has had a big impact on what would be typically the busiest quarter for many of our retail and consumer-facing members. And so that will definitely flow through to the official data in a couple of months, and we'll see that coming through.
And have there been any, so I suppose, more like Louise has talked about some of the big ones, you know, national insurance, pensions, business rates. What other things have been coming through in your sort of feedback from members?
So we've had, so there's been a number of consultations and policy design that have been launched. So Louise talked about business rates. There is a consultation at the moment as a call for evidence to look at how we can redesign the business rate system over the long term, which is something we've campaigned for years, to remove cliff edges and make it more growth and investment friendly. There are consultations out on the electric vehicle excise duty and how that works around what's now been called the tourism tax. And so members will have to pay quite a lot of attention to many of these because they will impact them in their respective sectors. If I can just go back to a point that the budget made there was a line in there around, you know, we've kept the corporation tax rate the same, we haven't increased tax on business. But I think that point that you made about the specific business that you're talking about has £2 million additional cost, I mean, that is something that has come through for many of our other businesses. I mean, national living wage is a good point, pensions, business rates, many of our members saying actually the discount that we get is more than undone by the revaluations. So I think it's just that point that government says one thing, but then actually the delivery and what we see is something quite different on the ground. And I think it's being aware of that and being able to feed some of that back is important. But there are a lot of consultations out at the moment. There are also, there's one that is quite a niche point that came up on write-down allowance and claiming capital expenses, where the system has been slightly tweaked and excludes claiming on, say, cars, which it's only limited to plants and machinery, which again, something that not many of our members picked up at the start, but for leasing and rental companies in particular in car manufacturing, given cars are excluded, has a big impact on their cash flow, which again, I think we weren't expecting. But actually that single policy on write-down allowance raises more than the gambling levies. So it raises a lot of money. It flew under the radar for a couple of days and is now coming to the surface. So I think those things are quite important, and those are the things that would make businesses more cautious, I think, looking ahead, because they don't like that sort of surprise.
Yeah. Now, there were some measures that actually just coming to mind, and Mo, I suppose, Alpesh, it might come into you, is like there was quite a bit on productivity, and I think it was like the belief in AI was something as well. They're putting some investment in there. They think that's going to have a significant impact on the UK economy, which you might want to touch on. But I suppose I'd be interested from the macro economist view of, you know, what's this going to do in 2026 for the UK? And then, of course, over this next 2-3 years, because some of these measures don't come in till the end, maybe conveniently just before a general election. Mm. But that's the cynic.
Yeah. Well, I think the budget in aggregate actually does give a little bit of a growth uplift in the near term over the next year. And that's coming back to what we spoke about earlier in terms of the tax rises are very backloaded, but the commitments on spending are actually quite front-loaded. Mm. So sort of the spending happens first, which sort of boosts growth. The tax rises then come in, which act as a drag on the economy. So it is a very sort of short near-term boost. Further ahead, actually, the OBR have downgraded their outlook for the UK economy. That's a fairly broad-based downgrade across all of the components of growth. A lot of it is coming down to that sort of very well-trailed downgrade in productivity by the OBR, which the OBR were keen to stress reflected economic judgments rather than any judgments about the impact policy measures. But Mo actually made a very good point, which is that the OBR don't judge any of the measures in the budget to really shift the dial on potential growth, which is that sort of speed limit, the capacity of the UK economy to grow. And that really tells you everything you need to know about the longer term. This really doesn't shift the dial on the growth challenges that we've been facing for the last 15 years or so. I think a lot of the early feedback that's coming from our members is this budget, in that regard, this budget was quite a big missed opportunity. Yeah. So in the near term, a little bit of a boost to growth, so probably positive to mildly neutral. Further ahead, as I say, the outlook is mildly worse, not much worse. But as I say, there are a lot of missed opportunities to really kind of boost the UK's productive potential.
I was really hoping, as we're in December, we might be moving into some Christmas cheer. I will keep finding for a little bit of optimism somewhere in it. But and actually, I was going to sort of talk more about the, I suppose, you know, those things that our members tell us that maybe don't reach the press releases. And some of it has been quite brutal. I've got one here from a very large international investor saying one of the worst budgets of all time. And we know some of the budgets in previous years, so I don't know if they've got a short memory or that, but, you know, was very incised, should I say, incensed, some of his comments. Others were a bit more technical, but just as pointed. One said, an income tax rise would have been more preferable to a hodgepodge approach that adds to horrendous tax complexity. And I know, Mo, that's one of the things we've been about, the simplification in the tax, not more increased complexity there. Another warned that without a plan to tackle rising welfare costs, more tax rises are basically going to happen.
Yeah.
And several told us that inconsistent or retrospective changes make it much harder to justify investment here. And quite a few saying that it just makes Europe, the US, more attractive. Yeah. So, you know, not the things that we really want to be hearing when we're looking for that growth and investment piece. But at the other side, I did have a very advanced manufacturer saying that this was pretty benign. Yeah. To them.
Yeah.
So it's not all.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, I think when I speak to members, they tend to fall in kind of two camps. Some who are saying, look, it, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. Mm-hmm. And let's kind of draw a line under it. We hopefully are in a better kind of fiscal position, more stability. Mm-hmm. Now we can move forward in terms of thinking about increasing growth in the economy. Yeah. And I think that is the more kind of positive spin you can put on things. But then we have lots of other members who are in the other camp who are saying, look, this does nothing for growth. Yeah. And not only does it kind of add to costs, as we're talking about, but it's around that confidence that we can move forward and think about growth going forward. And I think, again, that comes back to this kind of scattergun approach. Yeah. That the government has taken, and actually where we have seen some measures, they're working in complete contrast to other ambitions that they've got. So, you know, we've talked quite a bit already about things like national living wage. You know, that is at the same time as the government wants to get more people in employment. We talked about the increase of NICs on salary sacrifice pensions at the same time as they have launched a pensions commission to try and increase savings into pensions and pensions adequacy. And we talked as well, I think, about some of those measures on kind of EVs at the same time as they're trying to promote kind of growth in that market as well. So it's where things are moving in opposition to each other. And I think the other point, just perhaps a bit more of a political one, is obviously as you move closer and closer in the political cycle towards the next election, doing some of those perhaps kind of bigger moments of reform might come harder. And I think that's where people saw this very much. I think we've used the phrase like that missed opportunity. It's definitely a missed opportunity, but where they felt that this was perhaps almost the last opportunity to do some of those bigger things. And I think that might be right with some measures perhaps on the more kind of a household facing side. So for example, they increased some of the kind of taxes around property. There was a big argument ahead of the budget they should do a bigger ban reform of council tax and stamp duty and things like that. Personally, I think politically then that might now have come too late. But I think for the tax system, there's still quite a lot that they can do on the business side of things to improve simplicity, to improve the administration of the system, that I think they can now come on to do. And I think that's where, in particular, we can have a big role to support them in doing that. So I think that there are lots of areas that we can still look at and hopefully create that better environment for growth going forwards. But I know, yeah, there's quite kind of mixed emotions within the kind of membership at the moment in terms of that optimism going forwards.
Well, I suppose that's, you know, if you look at the UK economy, heavily dominated by services, but some of our core manufacturing are still absolutely critical, whether that's in automotive or the opportunity through transition and energy. So very, very different business models, I suppose. Yeah. Mo, you know, if you're in front of the Chancellor, you know, what's the message you think business is trying to send to her that she hasn't yet heard clearly enough?
Well, I think, and again, so after every fiscal event, we do a snap survey of our members, which is open for a week. And the idea of that is to get some instant insights from business on what they found good, what they didn't welcome in the announcements. And there was a lot of frustration in that. And I think it goes back to Louise's point around measures pulling in opposite directions. And this, I mean, you mentioned it from one of your member insights, that hodgepodge approach, where you've gone after a lot of small things that in isolation might not be that bad an idea, but if they're part of a broader strategy, they pull in opposing directions. And I think a lot of members struggle to know what the golden thread that runs through these measures are. And if you don't know where you're heading, it actually makes it quite difficult to invest and to grow in this country. And I think we are, at the moment, we're going through our regional council rounds. So we're consulting with members on sort of some of our work plan, but also getting some insights from them. And what I have heard from many members is, you know, the cost of doing business in the UK is much higher than our competitors. Energy is a big factor, which we need to address. But there are other factors like labour costs, and they've increased so quickly that they have eaten away budgets on automation and investment and investing in capital that would have otherwise been the case if this was happening more slowly. So I think there is definitely a storytelling element that members would want to get across to the government around where are we heading and what's the plan. But there are also some more practical things that government has to do around reducing the cost of doing business. I think in our survey so far, 7 in 8 of our members that have responded say this budget does not help lower the cost of doing business. 2/3 say it doesn't reduce the barriers to delivery, so for them to actually get building. And more than half say it doesn't help, doesn't go far enough in helping them innovate or scale. And I think that's quite, you know, again, I go back to the point I made earlier about this was, we talked about this being a budget for growth and growth being the central mission. Members don't, they do not agree with that. And while there are some bright spots like advanced manufacturing and those businesses perhaps in industrial strategy that will get some additional support, by and large, I think the takeaway is we need to have a more coherent strategy for business to support them and to reduce some of the cliff edges. I mean, the mansion tax that it's called is a great example of yet another cliff edge that has been introduced in the tax system, where if your home is just under 2 million, you're not hit by it. If you're just over by a pound, you are hit by it. We want to see fewer, we want to see more simplification of fewer cliff edges, because they disincentivize in growth. And, you know, there are little things like people saying, well, we wouldn't build a conservatory now, yeah, because it might,
it
absolutely, absolutely. And a tax has a big role to play in that. So I think that's what we want to see going forward, is tax simplification, given a new lease of life, especially given that the Office for Tax Simplification was scrapped 3 years ago. And we haven't seen tax simplification really in any form for years now. And there is a big opportunity there. Alongside reduction in regulation, which we should get them to talk about soon.
John? Yes, simplification and predictability is the one that always comes back. And I suppose Alpesh, say sentiment can always move faster than data, but are we looking at a sort of temporary wobble, or is it early signs of a much deeper confidence?
Yeah, it's very TBC at this stage. I mean, when we look at sort of sentiment and growth expectations in our own business surveys, they've been persistently negative over the last year. In fact, since the October 2024 budget, a lot of that reflects what we've discussed so far, you know, the increased cost burden on businesses and how they've adjusted to it, you know, and more recently, uncertainty ahead of this budget as well. And so it really feels like we've been sort of stuck in this quite bad place for a while. I mean, we could see a little bit of a temporary uplift post this budget. As I say, you know, there was a lot of uncertainty going into this particular fiscal event. And whatever sort of the impact on various ways of businesses, there is at least some more near-term certainty, which might give businesses a little bit of near-term stability. But there is a question over whether that is enough. As we've, you know, as we've discussed, this budget in aggregate didn't really do enough to make life easier for businesses. If anything, it added to employment costs, which have been a big drag on activity over the last year or so. So it's difficult to point to anything that would lead to a material upturn in sentiment in the near term. So I think, I should give a plug to our own economic forecast, which is coming out in the next couple of days, which is, of course, the definitive take on the UK economy. So watch out for that. We'll be unpicking some of the drivers of growth a bit more in that as well. You know, where is growth going to come from over the next couple of years, and what that might mean for business sentiment and things like investment and employment plans?
Well, you've both mentioned jobs, and that was one of the things, you know, again, one of those sort of contradictions in a way, because we haven't, it hasn't really been mentioned much, but of course they are, the government is very much focused on sort of long-term out of work, young people, getting them back into work. The reality, I suppose, with these higher costs is it's, you know, even though so many of our members are really keen to be involved in that, you know, we've been doing quite a lot of work there, but it is going to make it harder, isn't it? Like, the reality is this ambition to get, you know, 1 million, 2 million people back in work is probably going to slow down unless that sentiment really picks up in Q1, Q2 next year. It's just going to take longer and longer.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think that's where, again, we've seen big ambitions from the government on this, but the kind of actions or all the kind of policies that they're announcing are not really matching up to that. And if anything, make it harder. Like, we understand, you know, at the budget every year that we see some of those uplifts in the national living wage. They're still relatively high, going to be kind of 4% from April, and also seeing continued uplifts in those rates for younger people and things as well. So I think particular concern, one on the labour market in general, but especially for those younger people and people who are kind of coming into their first jobs and things like that. And I know we're obviously talking quite a lot about the budget today, but last week was a big week for a couple of different things. And one of those was also we had a big step change in the approach to the Employment Rights Bill as well, which is obviously incredibly important for the labour market going forward. And that's something, again, we've been in intense discussions and negotiations on with government over this last year. And one of the things that we saw is that we have got to a more kind of reasonable position in terms of day one rights, is that you'll be able to have a kind of meaningful probation period for 6 months. I think that is really important. And again, that was a kind of shadow that was hanging over many businesses when they were thinking about some of their decisions on kind of hiring or whether actually to scale back their workforces. But I think, again, this is another example of, oh, things are not going to be as bad as they perhaps could have been, rather than really a boost to confidence and making things easier for businesses.
Well, it's been sort of over a year of that sort of back and forward to get to a point that probably business, and we should have never had to go down that journey in the first place.
And I think this is a really important example of the approach that we want to see. If we knew that if we were able to get in a room with government, with the trade unions, and really talk through, okay, what is the practical way you are going to achieve the aims that you've got, that we could get to a reasonably sensible position. It's taken a whole year and lots of back and forth to get to that point. But actually it is where you can get a good consensus if we are around that table. And I think that's one of the big important messages to government at the moment. Like, actually, we really aligned on the ambitions that we want to see. You know, we've got the same ambition for growth and to see higher productivity in the UK, really getting around the table with businesses and saying, okay, right, how is it that we can improve the skill system? How is it that we can tackle high energy costs in the UK? How can we make it easier for businesses to hire? How can we simplify that tax system and really work with us together on it? That, you know, we obviously have a very large and developed policy team here. We've got fantastic members who give us great insights and really want to be part of these discussions, but we need to kind of really get together with the government around the table on this. And this isn't because you know, this government isn't doing this as much as previous government has before. It's because these are actually really complex, long-standing problems that I think we just really need to get on and tackle now within the UK economy.
It's sort of interesting because I've sort of heard exactly the same from like the CEOs of big energy companies when it comes to like planning decisions. You know, everybody said, you know, it takes anything between 8 to 12 years to get sort of the sort of shovels in the ground. And I know one particular CEO is like that. They always come down to it's only actually about 10 decision makers in the whole thing. Yeah. And if they could just get in the room and just, you're not allowed to leave basically until you've actually agreed the way forward. Yeah. So there is that, just that question of speed. And something I think you were talking to me earlier about is also just, you know, it's great when you see government focusing on something, but what can end up happening is we just have dozens and dozens of consultations.
Yeah.
And actually a lot of these topics we've been talking about for years. So a lot of the things we sort of already know what the problems are. It's like, how do we move that forward? So that disconnect sometimes of what government thinks business or groups want versus what businesses actually need.
Yeah, well, that's, I think, particularly when it comes to delivery, we need to see a much faster kind of pace with some of these things. And that's both in terms of actually developing policy approaches, but particularly when it comes to things like infrastructure and planning, we need to move much quicker to get those kind of spades in the ground. Whereas often it gets caught up in lots of kind of bureaucracy and lots of hurdles in the UK compared to other countries.
So like, we'll sort of head into our sort of last segment, which I sort of put down here, can government fix this? Because I'm not really being asked, I don't think any of us are, is what was in the budget. It is about, okay, can the government repair confidence with business, or has the ship sailed? You know, this opportunity. Everybody was talking about it. Are they going to grasp it? Is this going to be setting out that golden thread, this vision of where we wanted to go? Couple of other great feedback from some big CEOs. I asked him for sort of three words. He gave me three statements. From a growth perspective, non-existent. From a business employment perspective, bloody expensive. From a societal perspective, dreadful. Or I got, if every decision is based on flawed analysis like this, then no wonder we are in trouble. So, you know, as we've said all the way through this, is I think it's just this deep frustration. You know, they're not panicked. You know, business doesn't panic. I think they're like, we will handle this. We will do what we need to do. But they're frustrated because they can see the opportunities in the UK economy. They believe in the industrial strategy. They believe in the transition. They believe what our professional services can do, what we can export. So to me, it's just, they're just annoyed because it's like, it seems quite obvious to them. But I know it's not nearly as simple as that. So I suppose that question, Louise, is this fixable? And what would be the signal that government sort of would have to do now to show that growth is sort of still their mission?
Yeah, I mean, I think it, like you say, it really comes down to that frustration at the moment, and it's not because everything is all doom and gloom. It actually is because we can see the opportunities there and see the possibilities for the UK economy that we do want to kind of move on and really be able to grasp those. So I think, as we talked about today, this budget, we were hoping that we would get that stability and that kind of growth plan. I think really we've just got that first part of it around having that stability. And so we do really need to now see the government doubling down on that growth plan. And I think particularly for us, in the way in which that we will be engaging with government, engaging with members over the next year, I think there's kind of three elements to that. One is really thinking about how we can tackle some of these high costs for businesses at the moment. That comes down to things like the cost of employing people, energy costs, really big part of that as well. The second bucket is around this point around the pace of delivery. How can we make sure that we are just building things much quicker in the UK? Again, we saw small elements of that in the budget, that they're going to hire more kind of planning officers. That was one of the things that we were calling for, but it's a kind of partial measure compared to a much bigger investment we wanted to see in that. But I think further work on that, and also I think one of the discussions we've been having with government is around the way that they can have a better use of things like public-private partnerships as well. And then the third area is around, how can we make sure we are making the most of some of those opportunities in the UK, and where can the UK really be at the forefront of kind of growth across the global economy? And I think there you've got things like some of the growth in green energy. You've got some of the opportunities in kind of innovation and AI. And I think a really big piece that we're going to continue is around how can we make sure that we are promoting some of those kind of startups and really growing them into kind of globally consequential companies and kind of scale ups within the UK as well. But I think for each of those, it is really seeing the government's ambition on those and coming together with business around the table to look at those areas in a much more strategic manner rather than little bits and pieces everywhere. And I think it's almost that kind of tonal shift that we need to see from government. But those are the big kind of areas and priorities for us going forward.
It's even more, I knew that you'd be able to get us back onto a more optimistic footing. This was Mo as well. You know, what are some of the practical changes you would like government to do?
So I think, I mean, Louise talks about government engagement. I think we have to see that step change because of the size of these, some of these challenges around government engagement and government working in the open. So when we had this government get elected, they talked about their missions, and missions delivery, a lot of that rests on transparency and working in the open. And I think we really do need to see more engagement across all of the three missions that we've set out here to be able to really delve into some of these really challenging issues and actually come up with solutions with business. I think that a lot of our members want to be involved in that rather than feel like they're having things done to them. They want to have that consultation. Again, Louise mentioned on the Employment Rights Bill, it took a year and just, well, a year and a half effectively to get a single resolution on the Employment Rights Bill. There are other challenges with the bill that we'll continue to work on. And I don't think, if we're being honest here, the announcement or the sort of a point that the Secretary of State and for DBT made around there'd be 26 different consultations on the Employment Rights Bill, that probably strikes fear into the heart of some businesses who have to respond to some of these, you know, to 26 different consultations. Some of this can be resolved in other ways, and government has to be a bit more agile and a bit more open to whether it's task and finish or smaller, more regular engagements or policy sprints to come up with solutions at work, whether it's on employment costs, on employment rights, whether it's on energy, One area that could genuinely be transformative is around how government delivers its reduction by 25% of regulation over the lifetime of this parliament. That is really ambitious. And it's worth saying that, you know, in the same way that the incidence of tax has fallen in certain sectors, so to that point that you made around advanced manufacturing versus, that's like hospitality will not feel particularly happy after this, given national living wage, business rates, potentially a tourism tax. We have to, you know, there are some sectors that could really benefit from government working with them on reduction in regulation and doing that in a collaborative way so that regulators, the sponsoring departments and businesses are in the same room, along with perhaps some of that sector expertise that we can bring and some of our members, trade associations can bring. It's just a different way of working that I think government needs to be a bit more open to. And so I'm really hopeful that we get some of that alongside us responding to consultations on, say, business rates, on how you get more investment through the business rate system, and just thinking a bit longer term on making some of that policy design actually work for business. Because I think you get some really good results when you invite businesses in to share their thoughts about a certain area. Businesses don't mind, you know, it's not the level of taxation is not the issue, it's the predictability and stability of a system and how far ahead they can look, because that's what determines whether they invest or not. And the last point I'd probably end on here is most businesses in the UK are competing on the international stage. So I hear from members saying, we're already losing investment, not just the UK, Europe as well, to the US because of tariffs, because businesses are having to invest and build plants in the US to get around tariffs. So what we need to be doing is making the UK a more attractive place to do business and to avoid adding further burden, because the burden that we had from last year has not gone away. And many businesses say, that was bad, this was less bad, but together, it's still pretty bad. The costs are permanently higher. It's not like those went away. So I think just government has to bear some of those in mind and just engage with business a bit more openly. And I think we'll be able to get to far more efficient and innovative solutions as a result.
It's interesting you mentioned the US, because it's not just, the tariffs. It's that they've got a completely different approach to regulation over there.
Yeah.
Enormous market. They've got lower energy costs. It is a very compelling market to enter into. And one that, you know, certainly, you know, if you're based in Scotland where I am, you know, it's a market that they know well, we do too. Alpesh, I suppose my question there, you got a favourite lever you would like the government to pull?
I mean, take your pick, really. I mean, everything that Mo and Louise said, I think is quite critical. I think sort of stepping back from levers, it sounds like a very simple thing to ask for, but really government needs to put growth at the heart of all of its decisions, which it's not doing consistently, at least at the moment. You know, that means stability, that means delivery, and that means speed of delivery as well, particularly on the very sort of positive things that have been announced already. You know, you mentioned an industrial strategy. We've got the first trade strategy since Brexit. We have an infrastructure plan, but no point really having them if you're not sort of moving at pace in kind of delivering them as well. And as Mo flagged, you know, a lot of that involves consistent and early consultation with business. You know, our members want to work with government to design solutions which work well for the economy, which work well for everyone as well. And all of those things do have quite positive spillovers for things like, you know, the UK's attractiveness as a place to invest and do business, but also for households as well. You know, there is some evidence that in the run-up both to this budget and the last one, a lot of the sort of the negative rhetoric and uncertainty around policy measures did have a bearing on consumer confidence. And, you know, household spending is about 80% of GDP. So that does actually matter. So I think really, as I say, having growth at the focus of everything that you're doing, and as part of that, you know, everything that I spoke about, particularly, as I say, early consultation with business on any new measures to really iron out any kinks that might be problematic further down the line.
It's basically they need to run government like a business, where you have a clear business plan and every decision has to reflect back, does it fit with the plan or not? In our last minute or two, I suppose, let's just think about what is the CBI going to be focused on now as we go into Q1. Louise, what's your top priorities for working with government in the new year?
So I think, as we talked about, really thinking about how we can get better value out of some of those discussions that we have at the moment. Like I say, it's not that we don't have a lack of discussion, but it's kind of around the depth of some of those and around bringing some of these issues together to look at a more kind of whole systems approach. I think we talked about there addressing the cost of doing business, thinking about how we can speed up delivery, and thinking about really promoting where the UK can be kind of world leading. I think one thing that hopefully does come out of this budget is that normally when we're doing this reflection on the autumn budget, I'm also talking to the team here about, okay, how do we get ready for the spring budget? Because that's always just around the corner. Hopefully the Chancellor giving herself some more headroom might mean that we will have that update from the OBR in the spring, but we're not looking at yet again another fiscal event. That actually might be that we can now move to a system of having one fiscal event a year, just have that big budget in the autumn, which actually would allow for a lot more of this kind of in-depth consultation and discussion to think about some of those kind of more strategic policy choices come the autumn next year as well. So I think that's one of my hopes going into this next year, that we might see that shift and that more kind of strategic approach rather than jumping from one fiscal event to another. And this kind of cloud of uncertainty that often creates for businesses and for households.
And we've mentioned lots of consultations, yeah. Lots of things we'll be feeding into, but what are the ones that you think are probably the most critical?
So I think where there is genuine appetite from government to engage is on regulation and on business rates. So I think we'll definitely be focusing on those. The other piece of work that we'll be doing is a piece around the cost of doing business across different sectors and the cost of regulation across different sectors. And the idea of that is, back to my point about where the incidence of some of this lands, so like where some sectors are really badly affected and where some sectors are really sort of doing better or better off, is just trying to bring that through a bit more and highlighting that and doing a bit more of a comprehensive take of, you know, for some sectors, like how badly or benefit, like how much has the budget and other measures benefited you or disadvantaged you? Because sometimes it'll be different government departments that make some of those policies, and they may not see that taken together, they can be really make business very challenging in a certain sector. So that's one thing that we're going to be working on in Q1, Q2. Hopefully by May, we'll have something that we can then use as a bit of a springboard to try and highlight some of those issues and some of those areas where perhaps a reduction in regulation in particular could be really beneficial to making those sectors more attractive. And that'll be sectors beyond just the industrial strategy, because 60% of the economy is not within the IS, and we don't want to, you know, that's an opportunity to develop a broader economic strategy for those sectors that are part of the everyday economy, that are not just on the frontier. They're things that we interact with day in, day out.
I think that piece of work will be really important and really shining that spotlight on some of those sectors and where some of the issues that we've talked about really come together. I think we've already got quite a lot of members who are interested in that piece of work and feeding in, but we're also really interested if there's other members that want to get involved, want to partner with a piece of work, like do reach out to us as well.
And then Alpesh, what are the signals you're going to be watching closely for?
I think some of the sort of the early bellwethers in our business surveys will be quite important. So we spoke about sort of our data on sentiment. I think our sort of high frequency data on activity, things like employment, hiring intentions as well. Markets are a good one to keep an eye on as well, not just in the context of the UK, but we are living in a very volatile world. A lot of advanced economies still have quite precarious fiscal situations as well. So how are sort of markets' perceptions of that shifting? And how markets' perceptions of the UK shifting within that broader context as well. So I think a combination of all of those things is something that we will really be keeping our finger on the pulse of in the year ahead.
Well, I think we'll finish up there. Thank you for joining me today. And I really hope that we haven't put you off going out and buying all your Christmas presents, because we really need you investing in the UK economy as well. I hope you've really enjoyed these three sessions on the budget, and I look forward to speaking with you in 2026.